Well, good morning. Well, at least it's morning where we are. It's the 19th of September in Auckland City. Scotty and Mills with you on the Short Ball, a Rugby Pass podcast. Good morning to you, Mills.
Good morning, Sumo.
Are we going to talk about the prison-style fisting we witnessed on Saturday night?
I think we should touch on it, shouldn't we?
Wow.
Yeah, well, I actually watched it again, and then I watched a few interviews at the end, and then I watched our show.
Yeah.
And I was probably a little bit harsh on Alistair Coetzee when I said he needed to give himself a napper cut.
So you did say that.
I'm going to put it out there now. I absolutely apologise for that. I just was too late at night for me, and it sort of got over me, mate.
Yeah, that West Auckland in you coming out, just going straight to violence.
Yeah,
it's good.
Yeah, I know. I think when he said that he can take some positives out of that, I just thought, what positives? There is none.
Well, it was extraordinary, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was an extraordinary statement to make. First of all, we understand he didn't want to do one at all, and then he did. And our colleague Jamie Wall then had the misfortune of having to attend the post-match press conference with Eben Etzebeth and Alistair Coetzee, and as Jamie said, basically Eben spent the entire press conference death staring everyone.
Oh, really?
Trying to kill them with his laser Afrikaans eyes.
He would too, that guy. Jeepers. I was going to say that prick, but he would. He's not a prick, is he?
Jeez, you are firing up today. What's happening?
I'm not
fired
up. I don't know. I'm a bit relaxed today.
No, you are relaxed. I can see that. Exams must be over. We're going to give Andrew Mertens a call, one of the great All Black first fives and raconteurs of the game, and a man who watched that and was as stunned as we were, I think, Millsy, at the result.
Hey, Ruru, can you give me about 3 minutes?
What do you mean? I'm calling you live on a podcast.
Hey, look, I know enough to know what a podcast means.
What, you want me to call you back?
Can you?
Yeah, of course I can.
You're sitting on the dunny, aren't you?
You are, aren't you? Are you doing your number twos when you're supposed to be talking to us?
Are you on your Sealy Postrophili bed?
Now you're just making fun of an old man. We're not live, are we?
Yeah, we're live on the podcast.
Oh, let's do it then.
Oh, perfect. What do you need 3 minutes for? Explain yourself.
Oh, just getting organised in the morning. I'm in Sydney, you see, so I'm not particularly well organised morning person.
But you
might be surprised, Millsy. We've toured briefly together, and I know you thought I was probably one of the more organised and professional members of the outfit. But yeah,
you're
a tough one in the mornings for me.
Are you under control now, Anaru? Are you under control?
Yeah, absolutely.
Look, you work in finance. Your hours don't matter. The clock's always ticking.
He's just rolled
into
the ball.
That's right. It's all about relationships.
That's right. You're getting ready at 8 o'clock Sydney time to go to lunch. I think you've got 4 hours to get yourself together, okay?
Oh, my God. I'm sure you know you don't go straight to lunch. There's a morning tea to be had first and possibly a late breakfast. And if you can run them all together, then ideal.
Mertz, let's talk about Saturday night. You and I both were wrong. We both thought that the South Africans were a show, and they weren't. Explain to us what you saw in the game.
Well, you know what, as you say, we were wrong, but I think we were sort of right in a way, because I certainly thought that South Africa would pose us a very, very serious threat, more so than Argentina or Australia, and I think the All Blacks felt that too. So I suspect their preparation during the week was lifted a notch from what they'd been previously, because their performance was amazing. Disappointing from the South Africans, I think, but also that reflects the pressure that was put on them by the All Blacks, and Steve Hansen summed it up when he was interviewed pre-match, and I think Ian Smith said, "Oh, you know, what do you feel about the Springboks' rush defence?" And Shag said, "Well, you know, they've got to cope with ours as well." So they got up and they hit them hard, and gee, the skills that they showed throughout when they got the slightest opportunity to hurt the box were impressive, weren't they?
Well, I got a text from Wayne Smith, who you both know very, very well, and he said, "I finally discovered the secret to defence, which is to give them no set-piece ball." Millsy, you and Mertz might want to have a discussion about line-outs and scrums, because you're both great proponents of those areas of the game.
Oh, and Mertz, as you know, mate, whenever you play the South Africans, you know they're going to come out and drive the crap out of the forwards, and it's not the very good day. So when it started raining the morning of the test match, I thought, oh, here we go, they're going to get right into the boys. But then, mate, were you as surprised as I was to see, or was it a case of Romano? You know, there's talk that's come out now that Romano was the tactician and how they sort of defended the lineouts and things, but South Africa were just so poor. You know, what was your thoughts on that, mate?
Mate, it's a very, very impressive figure that Marks. He cuts, he's a huge, huge man. He's a beast. You know, if you want to design a rugby forward, no matter what position in the pack, you'd start with him, and I don't think you'd go a lot further, would you? But couldn't get a throw right, and there, you know, Millsy as well as I do, well, better than I do, I'd imagine. There are a lot of moving parts in those lineouts, but certainly the All Blacks had worked out tactic and obviously identified where the South Africans go to as their default sort of throws, and they pick them off. We've got world-class line-out exponents. I just think it's a bit of a shame. I mean, there's an elephant in the room there with South Africa, and Mills, you played a lot later than I did, so you've probably seen more of it than I did. But, you know, their selection policies, unfortunately, somebody's got to say it, they're not conducive to creating a merit-based team and the prestige that goes along with knowing that you and your mates are the best in their positions in the country. And, you know, unfortunately, they're not going to get consistency of performance until they change their attitude at the top level of the social engineering that dictates their selections.
Well, that's the whole thing. I mean, they've come out before the test and said the culture's fantastic. You know, we're building on guys really wanting to do well for the Springbok jersey. But how can you actually have a culture when there's still that element of thinking, well, you've still got to pick certain players of colour? And then, so how can you build on that culture? And as you say, you know, it's got to start at the top. You know, when you're sitting there beside someone that you know, and, you know, players will say, yeah, it's a happy as Larry sort of environment, but you know there's a guy sitting on the bench that's better than him.
Well, hang on. In fairness, I mean, the All Blacks have always had a policy that you've got to pick at least four white boys out of Canterbury. So surely it's the same thing.
Oh, yeah. Canterbury do the same thing, don't they?
Traditionally, there's not a lot else down there, is there, to be fair, traditionally.
Where do they go from here?
And I'm thankful for that. What's wrong with that?
That's exactly what I'm saying. Nothing's wrong. Certain people have had a great career based on that quota.
Well, when I was in the team, I was so white, there were only two other guys alongside me that had to be picked. I was that white. I counted for two.
Where do they go from here, mate? Because, yeah, I mean, you're known for winding up South Africans in your time with the double bird, which was still one of the greatest moves I've ever seen from you on a footy field. But, look, they're obviously gutted, and they're a pretty fanatical fan base over there. So what do you make of their chances over the coming weeks in terms of getting a result over either Australia or over the All Blacks?
I think they'll be a different beast at home, and you know, Mills will know that when they do lose, they get slagged off pretty solidly. So they'll be copping that for a couple of weeks, and they'll be smarting, and they'll want to put in a better performance. And you know, they showed enough against Australia and against Argentina to show that they've got, you know, they have got plenty of firepower. It's just putting it together consistently, and up against a team as good as the All Blacks, they weren't able to do that. But when you look at their locking stocks, you know, Mostert and Dutoy and Diaga and Itzebeth,
they're world class,
all amongst the top 10 probably locks in the world. Yeah. Big, strong, physical guys. So, you know, you've got players like that. Teams have bad games, and if a team has a bad day against the All Blacks and the All Blacks are on song, then that sort of a score, unfortunately, is going to happen. And I'm expecting a different beast when they're back in the Republic.
The one thing that we talk about so often in the game these days is that collision area, Meritzen. You know, when you talk about those big boys in that South African team, the likes of Itzebeth and Mostert, Sia Kolisi, I don't think there was a moment in the game where they won a single collision. And, you know, everything else comes out of that for the All Blacks in terms of getting front football or putting them on the back foot so their defensive line can get up. Why is it that they couldn't win that gain line area of the game? Is that an attitude issue? Is it a coaching issue? Or did they just come up against a team that was so intent on destroying them that they had no power against them?
Well, I think that last point is the key, isn't it? Now, Mills, you'll know better because I'm sure you're at the game. I wasn't, but did the All Blacks just look massively more intense on carrying the ball and on their defence than they had in the previous weeks or what? Because it seemed it from watching it on telly.
Yeah, I just think they won the breakdown. You know, they won the game, the battle of, you know, obviously it came from the set piece. You know, they had a good solid set piece, but then they won that breakdown then that perhaps they quite didn't get right against the Argentinians. So their clean out, their decision making was a whole heap better. But I was actually the bits that I was impressed about was the actual back three. You know, McKenzie started a little bit slow, you know, he dropped a high ball. Nehi Milner-Scudder coming back into some nice form, but Rico Ioane, man, hasn't he been a sensation? You know, what he's produced over the last few weeks has been magical,
really impressive. Mertz, what do you make of Bowden Barrett's game? Because he'd come under a bit of pressure over the last few weeks as well in terms of his game management. Did you think that was a lot better in this game?
Yeah, he was really clean, wasn't he? I mean, it's probably hard for a guy as good as Barrett is to get everything in line every game. You know, he's got that amazing running game that we know. When he drops back to fullback, he and has some space, you know, can really, really hurt teams. We know he's got goal kicking, and his goal kicking was good, obviously. But, you know, putting those all together is pretty tough, I'm sure, for, like I say, for a guy of his talent. But, yeah, he was good, and it was a function of the team performance. A little bit chicken and egg, I think, for a 10. You know, sometimes how much is his good performance contributing to the team's good performance and vice versa. So, you know, both sort of fed off one another. But certainly they were on the front foot, and that always helps. But just those nice little touches, the flick pass from Bodie to Nihonil Niskata was fantastic. Some skills from the forwards. And that try, I love that try from Brody Retallick. When you just see,
massive.
When you wind it back and just see the big man just striding out and getting up there. And then, you know, it wasn't just Brody Retallick. There were four or five around him at that stage that all could have scored the try. So, yeah, it was exhilarating to watch at times. And, like I say, a little bit sad for South Africans, but I just hope they bounce back.
Can't let you go, Mertz, without touching on the Wallabies. At a half-full Canberra Stadium, which is pretty disappointing for them. Maybe that's got something to do with the opposition and real lack of history between those two nations. But still, mate, they got the win. Has that done anything to assuage the current mood in Australian rugby?
Yeah, well, they needed it. Everyone was saying they needed a result. Just to, I don't know, try and get a little bit of momentum maybe. But, you know, it's going to be a tough trip for them coming up. I'm sure Argentina will be targeting the Wallabies of all the three teams that they get to host in Buenos Aires or in Argentina. They'll be targeting that one as the one they can really win. So, you know, it's going to be a tough tour for the Australians, but they needed that. On the back of having played in Perth and, the forced public getting out and about and sort of not trying to show support rather than be anti-ARU. So, you know, hopefully they're the start of something a little bit more positive in Australian rugby.
Perfect, Mertz. Thanks very much for your time, mate. Best of luck getting ready for your lunch, morning tea, dinner combination today.
Cheers, boys. Nice to chat. Looking forward to Tauranga in about 11 days, is it?
I'll see you there, boy.
Nice, Mertz.
See you, mate.
Andrew Mertz. Cheers, boys. Thank you. See ya.
Andrew Mertz out of Sydney, the great man. And look, I think when I spoke to Mertz about coming on the podcast today, you know, it was genuine surprise, that scoreline. And you guys have both been involved in All Black teams that have put in great performances and possibly surprised yourselves with how the result was put together. But that was incredible for me on Saturday night. And again, I go back to the point we raised in that conversation that I've never seen a Springbok team so submissive in the contact area.
Yeah.
And I can't put my finger on why. All the chat, and I'd spoken to a couple of members of the squad, to Matt Pearce, who travels with the team as a commentator for Supersport. Everyone talked about how positive they were, how encouraging their growth had been, the relationships within the team. You guys both talked about the race-based selections, but that hadn't been mentioned within the site.
Yep.
And in fact, guys like Sia Khaleesi and Eben Etzebeth, you know, are best of friends from those two very disparate backgrounds. So I just cannot put my finger on why it was that they were so submissive in that game.
I think the All Blacks done a great job in preparing for this game. You know, tactically and the you know, what they took into this game, you know, they've obviously thought, well, okay, let's just try and nut out everything that South Africans do. What are their strengths? Well, their biggest strengths is their set piece. You know, you nullify that, and they didn't nullify it. They dominated it. They dominated their set piece. They dominated their lineouts, which gives the South African a little bit of sort of motivation and hype. And when that was taken away from them, you know, that perhaps, you know, killed their confidence. And then they weren't able to win that physicality, which they are known to be able to do. What I was surprised about, and, you know, over the years, we've been given hidings as well, 50-odd points by the Springboks. But the surprising bit for me was the nil. You know, they didn't even get themselves into the start, the beginning of the game where they could actually kick some threes.
And they were lucky to get nil.
Exactly. So I think, you know, disappointed and surprised about the outcome, but wonderful All Black performance and very surprised at how it was the nil.
36 kicks in the game from the All Blacks. Everyone talks about the running game, scoring tries. We had said, I think last week on the podcast, that we might expect a little more kicking.
Yeah.
It's exactly what they did to the Springboks in 2015 in the World Cup, because they know they are not going to score tries from depth.
No.
36 kicks. That was 22 more kicks than they put in against Argentina.
Yeah.
I think they went in with a genuine plan to say to the Springbok back three, go on, have a crack at us. Yeah, and we'll trust our chase.
Yeah, absolutely. And they did. And variety, that was the key. You know, at the beginning, they put a few 28-metre kicks up, contestable, a couple of kicks, you know, ended up scoring. And so, you know, kick to regather. Aaron Smith played an awesome game. That quick tap and then the dink over the for Ioane's try, the one out wide where Bowden sort of the cross kick. And so, you know, they're 10 point kicks. Yeah. And so they varied their kicks, and they had a lot of guys that were finding space. I was impressed with McKenzie, you know, who often sort of counter attacking over the last couple of weeks. He found some space. So, and again, putting pressure on the South African set piece and then dominating it. And so, you know, when you do that to a big South African team, they're going to lack in confidence. And then all of a sudden you're seeing, you know, skills like the basic skills of throwing, you know, too deep over a line out. I mean, those are basic things. Mate, from South African rugby.
Marks could not have hit the ocean if he was standing on the beach. Let's be honest. I mean, it was average. You know, what about friend of the show too, Wyatt Crockett, coming on in the last 30 minutes? You know, we all thought he was a bit unlucky not to get the test start. Mm. I think we got an idea of why they kept him on the bench.
Yeah.
He absolutely savaged the South African scrum.
Yeah,
in that second half.
And there was one time, there was one scrum, you know, that Nigel Owen had sort of called them aside himself and his opposite and said, look, you've got to say stay up. And he did, you know, and then he nailed him. So, you know, that's why, you know, the other coaches, and we're not, mate.
Yeah, well, that's true. Speaking of which, selecting two squads. So Sam Kane, Brodie Retallick, Sam Whitelock, Bowden Barrett all get a rest for the game against Argentina. Okay, I can understand we've got depth in New Zealand rugby. I can understand they're trying to build even more depth in New Zealand rugby. What signal does that send to the Argentinians about how they are treating this game in Buenos Aires when you are leaving behind six of your starters for the first leg of this tour? Because if I was an Argentinian, I would be looking at that and thinking, oh, yeah? Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's a hard one because, you know, they've done it in the past. You know, they even did it when I was playing. But you have to keep growing these guys, you know.
Yeah.
You've seen Fifita. He's come out when he played the Argentinians. So, yes, it is going to be a challenge, but it's an expectation now. You know, put that expectation on these guys that are going into that jersey, the guys that have been rested, you know. These guys, now that are filling their spots, have got an expectation to step up to that mark. And you've got to do that. You know, there's no other way to be able to sort of breed the newer guys into the expectation of Test match rugby. And I think it can look like it's disrespectful, but in terms of the way the All Blacks are going, it's got to be done.
Well, Luke Romano likely to get a start against Argentina again. I thought he was great. He's had some raps in the press. In fact, we wrote about him a couple of weeks ago in Rugby Pass and the work he had done line-out-wise during the Rugby World Cup, and that's come to the fore again on Saturday night. I think the return of Jerome Kano is going to be scrutinised fairly heavily, and also, and we need to mention it, the return of Patrick Tuipulotu.
Yes.
Patrick had a pretty tough year in terms of not making the team to play the Lions because of an off-field indiscretion. He had had the failed drug test, which he was then cleared of, exonerated by his B sample, which stunned everyone. So this is a big opportunity for Paddy Tuipulotu to get back in the All Blacks and say, I'm still a part of this. Good decision from the All Blacks selectors to get these guys back in, given the fact that each has had a bit of an emotional roller coaster over the last 6 to 8 months.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, classic cases, Patrick, I'm glad he's back in there because he's an exceptional player, you know, strong. I mean, you're seeing what he's doing in the ITM Cup at the moment, and physicality-wise. And so... and has had a little bit of adversity, you know. Obviously, the drug thing was clearly not his fault, but missing out on the Lions was pretty big. Kaino coming back into it as well. And so it gives them a chance to bring these guys back in to an environment that's probably away from New Zealand. So it will be scrutinised here, but at least it gives them a chance to get away from New Zealand and just be able to sort of focus on the game rather than the outside influences that would actually occur if they were to be back in the team in New Zealand.
Exactly right. 1st of October, the All Blacks will face Argentina. That's in Buenos Aires. And then the following week in South Africa. And, of course, the third dead rubber, the Bledisloe in Brisbane. I think the Australians won't be considering that a dead rubber. A win against the All Blacks for the Australians later on this month would, or in October, I think would go a long way to cheering them up. But we return to the domestic footy here on the Short Ball today, Millsy. Jamie Wall has made me promise I'll talk about Wellington.
Mate!
60-14 against Canterbury.
I know. Wow.
Yeah.
How about Almora on
Yeah, how about Almora? Should we just spend the next 10 minutes talking about Asafo Almora?
Oh, mate, I don't think I've ever seen an in and out like that before.
No, not from a hooker. I've seen Dane Coles do some great things, right? Yeah. And we've seen Jimmy Parsons score an intercept try from, he'll say 65, but 45. Yeah, I'll give him 45. Asafo Almora takes the ball and straight up embarrasses a fullback and scores.
Yeah, well, as a fullback, you're expecting, okay, I'm just going to try and muscle up here because he's going to run over me. But to have that done and in and out, and you're thinking, oh, shucks, now I'm looking at ankle tapping. I mean, yeah. I'd be looking at ankle tapping right from the very beginning, but to be down on the outside.
Yeah, you're not lining up on that guy.
Oh, there's no way, mate. So, man, he's destined for bigger things. Oh, you know,
Isn't he, though?
There's no doubt about that. So let's hope we don't lose him.
Hey? We can't lose him, surely. I mean, he's not going anywhere. He knows he's an All Black in waiting, doesn't he?
Well, I think they will. Man, I'd like to see them take him on the end of the year
tour. He's got to go on the end of the tour. Mate, if you're good enough, you're old enough. They've taken apprentices before. Even if he gets the apprentice gig, he's got to go.
I mean,
just, you know, to say to the public, yeah, we know he's a star. We'll take him under our wing. I know they're very cautious about anointing the next generation of potential superstars in the game. But, I mean, this kid is out and out. He is a freak show.
Oh, man.
We've spoken about him so much, but, I mean, crazy.
Well, we've spoken about him so much because he's the only one that stands out. You know, he's standing out big time. And so, but I was disappointed with Canterbury. I mean, they made a lot of changes going into this game. You know, we spoke about physicality in terms of the All Blacks test match, but, you know, didn't Wellington show that?
They were good. I mean, we did the game. I was certainly down at Blenheim last weekend when Wellington got handed their first loss by the Tasmanians, and I was not expecting that result, not in my wildest dreams. But, you know, what a great effort. Chris Gibbs, who you know, has, I don't know what he's done down there, but it is working. Rodney Soyalo involved as well, Andre Bell. That coaching group just seems to have wrangled this team and said, right, cut the nonsense, we start again. And boy, are they tearing the place apart.
Oh, they are. And Gibbo's, he's a great man, and he loves getting amongst his forwards and sort of getting them barred up for big occasions. So, and he has. He's turned them around and sort of hardened them. Well, and a lot of them have come out of the Hurricanes as well. They've sort of lifted their game from that. But, you know, Bell, he's tactically very sound, and guys generally like him pretty good. And Rodney, with all his experience. So they've got kind of a complete package there, really. So there's some really good stuff coming out of the out of the Wellington line. So it's kind of opened things up. And North Harbour are looking quite pretty at the moment leading into this game now.
Well, I'm glad you brought them up. 2:30 p.m. Saturday the 23rd of September, New Zealand time, North Harbour taking on Canterbury. And this could well be the game of the round. Two premiership teams at the top of the table in the premiership. Of course, Wellington playing in the championship. So that win over Canterbury, while wonderful for Wellington, won't have a bearing ultimately on who can win the premiership. These two teams, though, North Harbour and Canterbury, certainly would be fancying themselves in the finals. We're already at week six. There's not long to go. I think Harbour would have seen that Wellington game and now will be thinking to themselves, well, they're not as invincible as everyone thinks.
Yeah, I mean, a couple of big wins, you know, against Counties and Southland, and you're thinking, well, you know, this Canterbury team could possibly go all the way.
Yeah, speaking of, how do you put 156 points on in two games and then get dusted by 60 the following week?
Oh,
welcome to the Mitre 10 Cup.
Exactly.
Tell you what, you'd be tough to make a buck at the tab on this competition. North Harbour, led by James Parsons, of course. You know, when you talk about teams that are undergoing some sort of resurgence, you spoke about Chris Gibbs in Wellington. Tom Coventry at Harbour, by all accounts, his work with the pack especially, has been outstanding.
Yeah.
Are we going back to basics here and saying, to win this competition, you first of all just need to muscle up front?
Oh,
I mean, it's the adage, isn't it?
Oh, I think you do. And I think It is old school, but it's all the fundamentals. You know, if you win the battle up front and a physical and winning the contact and things, the chances of winning are quite high. And so, you know, again, you know, you got someone like Tom, and I had a good yarn with Chip after our show in the weekend, and he was saying, you know, that the boys absolutely love him. You know, the little things that he brings, the little sort of bit of knowledge that he gives to the boys is they've sort of fed off it. So, you know, Harbour going good guns. So it's good, great to see.
Can we talk about Matt Vaienga?
Yeah.
I reckon the most underrated player going at the moment in Mitre 10 Cup. Yeah, everyone's talking about Tevita Lee on one wing and this guy here and that guy there, but Matt Vaienga and Matt Duffy another.
Yeah.
Matt Vaienga in the midfield for North Harbour has been an absolute weapon all season long. I don't think this kid's even got a contract for Super Rugby.
Yeah, I heard he hasn't. So there's no doubt in my eyes he should be getting a contract somewhere. I mean, particularly against, I think it was the Auckland game where he was just dominating. He sort of stole a ball, and I think Tevita Lee ended up scoring. Yeah. So defensively, he's you know, he's aligned with his players on the inside and the outside. But on attack, man, is he's setting guys like, you know, Tevita Lee and Duffy out. You know, he's setting them up. And last week, scoring a try against the Taniwhas.
I don't want to talk about it.
Mate, it was
don't
a good try.
It don't bring it
It was
up.
A good try. We were sitting there thinking he's not going to keep that. He's not going to have that intercept. And all of a sudden, finished it off. So I am definitely underrated. And I'm hopeful that he's, if I was a coach, I'll be picking him straight away.
Sorry, mate. You lost me there when you started talking about the Taniwha going down. Did you say something?
Well, the Taniwha going all right, mate. That ain't good.
I don't want to talk about last weekend. I've had Stephen Bates in my ear. I've had all the Harbour boys have come out. You know, they know how I feel about the Taniwha.
Oh,
there's no sympathy there. Where's the empathy? You know, I don't bag anyone else. Where are my oysters?
What?
Where are my oysters?
What? Mate, did you smell that?
Where are my oysters?
It smelled like bull crap.
Yeah, fair enough. Hawke's Bay got dusted again by Counties Manukau. They're going to take on Taranaki this weekend. I don't hold out a lot of hope for them at McLean Park. Millsy, I think it's just one of those years for the Magpies. They've been beset with injuries. I think they've used 37 players now.
Yeah, a lot of players.
So far in the Mitre 10 Cup. You know, no coach can really get over that level of disruption in his team, but I really feel for them. And last week, I was calling the game against Counties Manukau. Both teams were guilty of it. I wouldn't have done the second half if I was going to scratch my eyes out any more than I already had in the first.
Yeah.
There was a basic skill level missing, and I really felt for Hawke's Bay, because every time they looked like they were going to produce something, someone would drop the ball, the pass would go behind a player. You know, it was so scrappy, and it reeked to me of a team that is just trying so hard to right the ship, and the harder they try, the worse it looks.
Yeah, and that's one of the hard things. I think the biggest thing that can hinder your team's performance is injuries, and when you're talking about changing 37 players, and particularly in a province that's so small, you know, they're scratching at getting depth, and so... But you've got to give credit to them. You're saying, you know, as you say, they're trying their hearts out. And unfortunately, you know, as we say, the harder you try, the worse it can get. So it's just one of those years now. They're just going to have to try and regroup and, you know, hopefully in the back of their mind start planning for next year and they don't have a bit of bad luck.
Can we talk about mascots for a second?
Which one?
The Tasman Markle Shark Man has no eyes.
What?
There's no eyes. It's just like dead shark eyes. They're just holes.
Oh, is he blind?
If you're going to go to the trouble of making a full Markle head for your mascot, surely eyes are fundamental.
I tell you one mascot.
You just look straight through them. There's nothing there.
I tell you one mascot that stood out over the weekend.
Steely Dan.
No.
Which one?
Well, the guy that got TV coverage for his sponsors or whoever it was up in Whangarei, mate. What's the
Tony the Taniwha.
That's the one.
Oh,
mate.
Biggest post-match interview pest of all time. Every time there's a post-match interview, Tony's just creeping behind like an absolute stalker.
He got a good 5 minutes.
He's got the all cars on his shield.
Yeah,
there's a plug for you, all cars.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so, he's right in amongst it.
Mate, he's if you're wanting to get your business out there, he's the man to talk.
Tony the Taniwha shield. It, I reckon one of the great advertisers. Spots in our game.
That's it.
The Hiribana Spudman, though, making an appearance again this season, and I did say he's the greatest anthropomorphical.
You're still getting free spuds, aren't you?
Yeah, anthropomorphic root vegetable in the game. I was corrected by a horticulturalist. Technically, not a root vegetable; it's a tuber.
Oh, it's not a root.
That's a tuber.
A tuber.
A potato is a tuber. So he's the only tuber mascot in rugby.
Can I ask what a tuber is?
Yeah, a tuber is a potato.
Oh, okay, so...
Well, it's a type of thing that grows on a root, obviously. I don't know. I failed bio. You're failing chemistry. We're even, mate. Finally, on the mascot stakes, I do want to talk about Steely Dan. Steely Dan's head is enormous. And also, he was on the cones on Sunday afternoon.
On the cones?
Yeah, I don't know why Steely Dan was walking around Ecolite Stadium with a road cone. But Steely Dan does not need to be on the cones. Mate. He's entertaining enough without getting on the cones.
Steely Dan better be careful because that goat that was there on the weekend.
Gary the goat. There's another
Gary
one.
Gary the goat.
Gary the goat's up there. It used to be Poppy the goat and then Poppy died or was killed. I don't know which. But they haven't got Gary in New County's Monaco jersey yet.
Oh, Gazza.
Yeah, Gazza the goat.
Gazza the goat. Well, there you go. If Steely Dan's still on those cones, mate, you better be careful.
Gary the goat will be down there.
Exactly.
Gary the goat's got a stump. Well, they need to get Gary a jersey. I'm very upset that Gary doesn't have his own county's Monaco jersey. No, during the Great Shield era, Poppy the Goat would be on her stump in a county's Monaco jersey.
Oh, serious?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. The only live goat mascot in our game.
Only?
Yeah, the only live goat mascot.
Only live anything, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, didn't they? Taranaki used to have an actual bull.
Actually.
But there was some drama
around that. They did, eh?
And they still ride horses around the Crusaders. But Mitre 10 Cup, I think that's what we lack. Maybe we need more live animal mascots.
I can see a stag coming out for the old...
Can't you?
Yeah.
Just running an old 18-pointer out onto the middle of the field and letting it go.
What about the Aucklanders? The seagull?
You can imagine, though, if you rolled a live stag out onto Rugby Park before a Southland game, everyone would leave, get in their cars, pull out a shotgun and take shots at it.
They would actually.
They'd hunt it for the backstraps. You can't have a live stag mascot around Rugby Park. Oh, we'll work on this. I mean, Auckland's got a seagull too. Can we discuss Auckland's mascot issue at the moment? They've got an identity crisis. They have a potato, they have a seagull, and they have a sky tower.
What happened to that? Harbour Masters.
Oh, and they've got a house, like Barfoot and Tonton, like the house.
Yes.
It's just a like guy dressed up
like a house.
Well,
I was going like to say, like, the Spud, isn't it? Isn't that counties?
Yeah, but the Hiribana family are based in counties, but they sponsor Auckland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, long time.
So,
long time fans.
Who's your mascot?
Spudman.
What, the Auckland?
Yeah.
What happened to the seagull?
No, they've still got the seagull, and they've got a potato.
Have they got
Sky And they've
City?
Got a sky tower, and they've got a house.
Oh, okay, shucks.
They've won one game, and they've got four mascots. That's an issue. Don't you think that's an issue? I mean, at Counties Monaco, you've got Steely Dan.
Yeah.
In Southland, you've got the stag.
There's just one, right?
Right. In Waikato, you've got Mulu. In Bay of Plenty, you've got Steamy.
Oh. Well, maybe it represents the different parts of Auckland they're from. Barfoot and Thompson, Central, Real Estate. Sky City, yeah, it's conflicting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is conflicting. I've got an issue here. We better round out the short ball today while we get to grips with this current mascot crisis in Mitre 10 Cup. But all the action, of course, on rugbypass.com. This weekend, get amongst it. It all starts with a Wednesday night Bay of Plenty taking on Southland from Rotorua International Stadium. Otago will play Auckland. Manawatu will lose to the Taniwha. North Harbour take on Canterbury. Waikato, Wellington, Hawke's Bay, Taranaki. Bay of Plenty back in action against Counties Monaco. And they round out the weekend with the Muckle taking on the Stags from Trafalgar Park in Nelson. I've been Sumo. He's been Mills. This has been The Short Ball. Enjoy the footy this weekend.